Yeah, you got to go with the flow.
Yeah, you got to roll with the punches, Van the Man. Hey, hi, everybody. Your old friend Mike Houlihan here. Welcome back to Hibernian Radio. So glad that you are joining us once again. Boy, it's another wild night here on the river. A little chilly, a little nip in the air over at Lizzie McNeil's, but we thought we'd try and get one more in. It's still kind of nice. Welcome back to Hibernian Radio. We're brought to you by McCann's Irish Oatmeal, Mike Haggerty, Buick, GMC, Volkswagen, and our old friend, personal injury attorney, Carol Ann Gallagher. And you know what? I'm going to Ireland Friday. We'll have a great show on next week. We'll have a rerun of Alamo Lynch. But Dick Haggerty and Bill Haggerty are both going on the trip with me, so I'm looking forward to that. But tonight, in keeping with our commitment to honoring Irish first responders because they are the modern-day equivalent of our Irish mythological heroes, we've got a big hero here with us, Commander of the 18th District, Commander Dan O'Shea. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Thank you.
Thanks for doing this, by the way.
Thank you. Thanks for the invite.
Yeah. So we're right here in your backyard, huh?
This is it.
Yeah. Now, you grew up in St. Rita Parish on the south side.
I did, yeah.
Where'd you go to high school?
I went to St. Lawrence.
Well, that's right. You told me that.
Okay. Yeah.
And how'd you get into the cops? Were there family in the cops? Or?
No, actually, I was the only one in the family.
How many in your family?
I got two brothers and a sister.
Okay.
I was the only one that was interested in law enforcement right around senior year of high school, and then just kind of ran with it.
Good for you, and you got 22 years in.
22 amazing. Years yeah. with the city, 3 years as a Cook County Sheriff before
Oh,
this.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah, did you start with the sheriff?
Started with the sheriff's department, yeah.
Is that Mike Sheehan?
Mike Sheehan,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, the best.
Great
yeah.
sheriff, yeah.
Yeah. The real sheriff.
That's it. You said it,
yeah.
not me.
Well, that's great. You've had a great career, and you're a young man to be a commander, I would think. When did you become a commander?
Just over a year ago, about a year and a half ago, so yeah.
Now, there was another commander of this district, Commander Paul Bauer, and died in very tragic circumstances, and you replaced him, basically, right?
That's correct, yeah.
And I read a story where you... similar to his situation, you're in the car, you hear a report of a bank robbery in progress. Tell us about that.
I was out. We had two bank robberies Monday and Tuesday, and we knew that this guy was going to hit again. So I put all my tac teams on all the Chase banks. He liked Chase banks.
Oh, yeah.
And then I had a shooting in the district, so I responded to the shooting, and all the tac teams came off of the banks to respond to the shooting. And then right after that, the bank alarm comes out, the car responds, and the offender jumped into a taxi cab. So I wasn't too far away, and I started
That was his getaway.
Way. That was his getaway.
In a cab.
Paid cash.
yeah, he had plenty of it. Yeah.
So they gave me the description. I'm driving, and the cab's coming right at me. Passes me up. I look
kidding.
In the back seat. The guy fits the description.
Yeah.
So I spin around, call for the troops, and pulled them over and took them into custody. So yeah.
That must have been wild.
Yeah. Yeah. The press made a big deal out of it just because of the similar circumstances
sure.
as to Commander Bauer.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was honored to replace Commander Bauer and keep all the good things that he had going in this district.
That was a
alive.
Tragic thing, but I'll tell you what. His funeral was Chicago at its finest.
Oh.
You know? It really was. And the whole thing down 111th Street. And,
I've been to too many police funerals, but this one, unbelievable.
Yeah.
The support. And even in the 18th District, all the support from the businesses and the residents has just been unbelievable for the Bauer family. So, yeah.
Now, what's the boundaries of the 18th District?
Right here at the river on the south end, all the way up to Fullerton.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, we go all the way up to Lincoln Park, and then from the lake all the way over to the river on the west end, including Goose Island.
Well, you're in the hot area. That's the hot, totsy-tots. That's like the nightlife section of town.
I always tell everyone I went from gangs, guns, and drugs to dining, dancing, and terrorism.
And terrorism.
Yeah, no, it's a big deal. Everything down here is a big deal. So,
yeah.
But the officers are doing an unbelievable job. We've changed a lot of things we do down here, including bringing in one of the new technology centers.
Just talking about that.
Yeah, first thing I asked for. So
yeah.
It's called the Strategic Decision Support Center, and it's 24-hour monitoring of all of our pod cameras. We also have some license plate reader technology and some other things that the officers use to solve crimes, and it's been phenomenal. We're really turning the page on solving crimes in the 18th District. The hard part is preventing crime.
But
it's really good. It's a great district. The officers are unbelievable, really stepping it up. And in this era of policing, which is probably the most difficult era ever.
It's terrible. The whole culture, this anti-cop culture, is awful. And it's the media enforces it, and all these jerks in Hollywood are behind it. It just makes you sick.
Yeah.
It's a tough time to be a cop.
It is.
Yeah.
And you know, hats off to the officers, the men and women of the 18th District, in one of the most challenging times, are knocking it out of the park.
Good.
All of our proactive policing measures that I look at to see if they're doing their job are up in this district, and they're really coming around.
Yeah. Now, everybody reports to you in that district.
Yep.
You're the boss. Yeah. That's a big... were you a commander before that?
I was not. I was a captain in the 6th District on 78th and Halsted.
Oh, yeah.
For 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah, a little different neighborhood.
Lovely area.
Yeah. So high gang crime, high narcotics activity. So, and prior to that, I was a sergeant, lieutenant, and captain in the organized crime division.
Oh, no kidding.
Doing long-term narcotics investigations with the FBI and the DEA and stuff. So that's where I spend a majority of my career.
No kidding. So any stories you'd like to tell us? I mean...
You got to wait for the book.
Oh, okay. You know, I'm reading a cop's book right now, David O'Callaghan.
Oh, yeah. He's coming. Actually, he's coming tomorrow to the 18th District.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to have him on the show when I get back from Ireland. I just started reading the book. And there's another guy who has a great book, Larry Casey. Do you know him?
I've seen his book. I have not met him, but
it
looks like a good book as well.
Yeah. And that's good that these guys are writing about it, because you have, until you walk in somebody's shoes, you have no idea.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's just... a revelation of the things that police go through every single day.
Yeah, I mean, what we see in an 8-hour tour, most people don't see their whole lives. So, it's very challenging, but it's good to get the word out. You know, one thing I always thought we did poorly in the police department is explaining why we do things the way we do them. So anytime we can get that message out and explain to people, it seems to make them understand our life a little bit better.
You know, when I see the cops, I say, blue lives matter, you know, because I just feel so bad at the crap they're putting up with. You know, what you saw that thing in New York with the guys throwing buckets of water on the cops. That's de Blasio, you know.
Disgusting.
It
absolutely
really is.
Disgusting.
Unbelievable.
And I, you know, we had to talk about it here in Chicago.
Yeah.
And that's not going to happen here. We're not going to allow that to happen. I mean, people need to go to jail, and people need to be held accountable for that. So,
So what's the biggest crime committed here in the 18th District, and what's, you know?
Well, this might come as a shocker, but cell phone theft.
Really?
Oh, God, yeah. Everybody walking down the street.
These punks walking up and saying, give
me that. Yeah, I mean, but people not paying attention to their surroundings.
That's
one of the biggest things we try and preach, is to just take your head out of your phone for the commute home. They're just walking up and plucking them right out of people's hands.
So. Do you have Michigan Avenue? Is that
I do,
part?
Yeah. I got the Mag Mile.
Holy cow.
You got River North, Mag Mile, Lincoln Park, the Gold Coast.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Goose Island.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... They're keeping us busy, but you know, we're catching them more than we're not catching them. But we need a little help on the.
Do they just take the phones and sell them again? Is that?
Yeah, there's a lot of stores that'll purchase a cell phone, and you know, we've always argued that these companies have a way to make that a paperweight as soon as
they
it's
do.
Stolen.
But they aren't. No kidding.
There's too much money involved. You know, it's a business. We understand that, but. You know, they could shut it off, and it could be disabled.
No use to anybody.
No use, but these secondhand stores, as soon as they snatch them, they turn them off and, you know, they resell them or wipe them.
And I imagine nobody's putting up a fight. They don't want to get shot for their cell phone.
Right. Yeah. And most of it's kids, you know, stealing cell phones. That fine line between a theft and a robbery, you know, robbery is when somebody uses force.
Yeah.
Or the threat of force. And a theft is when they can just take it clean, you know.
Yeah. Snatch and grab or whatever you call it. Yeah.
So that's our that's what we obviously we concentrate on violent crime.
Yeah.
Anytime you know, we get any call of any violence, we respond immediately to that, but we're trying to knock down the robberies, and most of it is cell phone stuff. So
yeah.
We're trying to educate the public about.
And there's a lot of tourists in this district as well.
Absolutely. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
We have Navy Pier.
Sure.
Big tourist attraction. So we're just trying to educate everyone on how to safely navigate the city without. You know, we had a guy, here's a perfect example, a guy walking down the street watching a movie on his iPad. And unfortunately, he was the victim of a robbery.
He's like getting hit by a car.
Yeah. I think he was a lawyer or something.
And so they just grabbed that right out of his
hand. Yeah, they pulled up, jumped out, surrounded
him. Oh, they
had
a car. Yeah.
Yeah, stolen car. We get a lot of people that come down and stolen cars to commit their crimes down here.
Oh,
so
yeah.
That's where our license plate reader technology really helps us. The minute we get a stolen car, we start tracking it through. We have license plate readers on a lot of our vehicles.
Oh, yeah.
And then we have some fixed license plate readers throughout the city. So we can track a stolen car. Most of our stolen cars end up on the south and west side.
When you have to deal with all this, what's the situation with your wife and kids? Do they worry about you? I would imagine they do. And you have two kids, right?
Yeah, I'm sure they do. I try not to bring work home.
Yeah.
It does take up a majority of my time. You know, the phone's always ringing.
Oh, yeah.
Waking up in the middle of the night. When I first got the job, I think my phone rang four nights in a row at like 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
And my wife was like, is this how it's going to be?
Yeah. And, Commander.
Yeah. It was just one of those things, you know, it's just unfortunate. But, I try and keep it separate as much as I can to not worry them so much. But
all those big festivals, that's your district as well.
Oh,
then.
Yeah.
Taste
yep.
of Chicago.
Fourth of July.
All that. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Aaron Water Show. Big. Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of crazies down for that. You know.
Yeah, we do a good job. We get some outside help. It's not just here on my personnel. We get a lot of extra help, SWAT team.
Oh, really?
Federal resources. Yeah. So the city does a phenomenal job of handling all these big, large scale events.
Now there was a thing for a while on Michigan. This was before you were a command. They're wilding. Packs of teens would just run through Neiman Marcus and go nuts and stuff like that. And
yeah.
How do you combat something like that?
So we've had a few of those since I've been here, and we've put a plan in place. The kids come down. They start fighting amongst themselves.
Yeah.
You know, it's not really directed at the police, but we monitor any large group that comes down here, whether it's bicycles, motorcyclists, protests, large groups of kids on spring break. So we kind of just, we monitor it with our cameras and our personnel. We have a fantastic bike team in the
police. Oh, yeah, I've seen them.
They're unbelievable.
All over the lakefront.
I'm telling you, they knock it out of the park. They handle all the protests, the large-scale protests.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, so they're phenomenal. So, you know, when the kids start fighting, unfortunately, you know, we have to protect the citizens, so they have to go to jail.
Yeah.
So we, you know, we're not trying to lock up a bunch of kids for coming downtown, but once they start breaking the law, we have to lock those kids up and have their parents come and get them. So it's a misdemeanor, you know, just have the parents come down. Some of them don't even know that their kids are down here.
Yeah.
So we try and address it like that, and that seemed, once we started that and put that in place, it really knocked them down from coming down as much as they do. But they don't have anything to do, you know, so they come downtown and
entertain themselves.
Yeah.
That room, what's it called? The techno room?
Yeah, the Strategic Decision Support Center.
How big is that? I envision this kind of phalanx of TV screen.
Yeah, you should come by and see it.
I would. I'd love to see that.
I'd love to have you.
And so there's guys just monitoring this 24 hours.
Yeah, and the big thing about that is we also have some technology where we can actually see where 911 is called, and it hasn't been dispatched yet. It'll be flashing on the screen, and the guy in the room can actually click on that and see what's going on at that location. What's the call that's coming out over there, whether it's a battery in progress or a man with a gun. And that actually shows the first four cameras that are closest to that call. So they can actually get eyes on on that location before we even dispatch a police car and see what's going on. So it's a fairly big room, not real big, but, you know, it's for officer safety, for public safety, it is hands down the top.
You know, the parking lot over here, one night Skinny and I were walking back to the parking lot, and there's one on a post there, and this is, and we had visions of, you know, Big Brother and all this, and we're a little bit half in the bag walking back, and I go, look at that, there's a camera watching us, and we start yelling at it, you know, and no response, you know. All of a sudden, the light went off, and I was like, let's get the hell out of here. Scared the hell out of us.
Yeah.
But whoever was in that room went, look at these two jerks, I'm sure, because we're just going to give them the finger.
Yeah.
And stuff.
Well, you know, a lot of people didn't want the cameras years ago because of the big blue flashing lights on them.
Yeah.
And now it's just a little black ball that you can't even tell it's there.
And you don't know if it's recording or if it's on or what. Yeah.
Yeah, all of our stuff is recorded, so even if something happens, we can go to the camera and rewind and see, you know, what happened if the camera's facing in the right direction.
All right, so you've been a cop for 22 years. What's the most challenging thing you've ever faced that you can talk about?
You know, I think coming in behind Commander Bauer was probably the most challenging.
Yeah.
You know, I was honored that they chose me to replace him. Obviously, you can't replace a human being, especially Paul Bauer.
He was well-liked.
Oh, God, yeah. He was a great guy. I made
his
captain with him.
His daughter worked with Skinny. Or not his daughter, his wife, Erin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Erin's great.
She's a great lady,
And they have been nothing but a class act since this happened. So, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, the challenge of bringing not just the community but the officers back on their feet to get them back to where they need to be has been probably the most challenging in my career so far. But, you know, it's I just want to keep all the things, all the good things that he's done in this district going and improve on them. So, that's been the biggest one.
Now, when you started out, where did you start out at?
I started out in the 11th District on the west side, Harrison and Kedzie.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any stories about that?
Oh, I'll tell you. It was, you know, I mean, the murders are the big thing that sticks out. You know, the murders. Yeah.
I wonder why.
You know, back in 97 when I came on this job, there was almost 800 plus murders in the city.
Oh, yeah.
And I, you know,
for the year,
I was kind of surprised that the media wasn't all over it like they are now.
Yeah.
And now we're approaching 400. Still not a great number for the city, but most of it's gang and drug related. So that's where I like to, you know, with my background in narcotics, that's how we attacked violent crime with the gangs. You know, they had such a reliance on narcotics to fund their weapons and their lifestyle. That's why we attacked the gangs through the narcotics enforcement.
Right. Did you ever see that site, Hey Jackass?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, they're right on the money there.
They have a blow-by-blow every night.
Yeah.
Who gets shot? Who got murdered?
This weekend, stupidity. Yeah. You know, it's great.
I mean, I was writing a book about the 2015 mayoral election. That was a big help just because the murder rate was out of control, and Rahm Emanuel's like, hey, no, everything's good. It's like, I don't think so.
Right, yeah.
And I would go there, and if some guy had a goofy name, they made a point of putting it in there. They had a sense of humor about it, but it was scary at the same time.
They got the shot in the junk-o-meter.
Yes, so, exactly. Okay, you remember? Yeah.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
So, and you're dealing with that stuff every day. You kind of, cops pick up kind of a gallows humor about things. I've discovered this by meeting a lot of you.
Right.
that's what keeps you sane, I guess, right?
You have to, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the stuff that goes on, especially over on the west side back in the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I can remember just sitting on a crime scene. There's a dead body in the middle of the street. It's pouring rain. And they're like, you're number five on the list for detectives to get there. So, I mean, here we are, two guys in a squad car sitting on a crime scene with a dead body in the middle of the street. And, you know, you're number five on the list. So we were waiting, you know, 2 hours for everyone to get. I mean, it was so out of control.
Oh, you were like the fifth one they had to get to.
Right.
Oh,
so,
wow.
You know, this poor guy's, you know, the ambulance had already come and left.
And they just left the body there?
Yeah, this guy's just laying in the middle of the street. So. Yeah, it was a big deal. You know, almost 900 murders in the city and not a blip on any of the media. But, you know, the 24-hour news cycle and all the social media and everything, now everything's all over the place. So.
And what's the... a lot of the, no, I don't want to get too political on here, but there's a lot of people going for gun control. It's like, that's not going to stop these guys. If they want to get a gun, they're going to get a gun. It doesn't have to be legal. You know?
That's right.
That's like,
I mean, that's, you could leave a gun on the table there for a year and it won't harm anyone.
Yeah.
And as soon as some idiot picks it up, that's when we have problems.
That's when I want to have one.
Well, yeah.
So I could take that idiot out. Anyway, we salute you. Keep doing what you're doing.
No, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. I appreciate all the support, too, of you guys supporting all the first responders.
You know what? We made a decision back in January. Actually, it was my son's name, or my son's idea, to work on Irish first responders. And they all have been just so great and the greatest stories in the world. And these really are brave people and funny. You know, some of them are just hilarious.
Until tonight, though.
No! Yeah. You're cracking me up. But it's a great, you know, you might say we're doing a thing, but it's really paid off for us, for the show as well. And our audience is building.
Good.
Although I did want to give a shout out to Jeff Lang. Did you know him?
No.
He was a Cook County Sheriff's Police Officer. He wanted me to give his dog a shout out tonight. I said, 50 years, almost 50 years in show business. And I'm doing shout outs to some cop's dog.
Wow.
There you go, Jeff. Bailey the Beagle is 21 tonight, folks. All right, we'll get back to that in the humorous section of the show. Thanks so much. Can I keep in touch with you?
Absolutely.
And, you know,
because, yeah, anything you need
and
here
if you
in the 18th
if you
district.
Want to send us a guy that you know think will have a story to tell, we want to, or a lady. You know, actually, we need to meet more female officers. We've had a couple on. They've been terrific.
Okay, great.
Yeah. But stay safe.
Yeah, thank you.
All right.
No, thank you, Danny. And we appreciate all you guys' support.
And we appreciate you, pal.
Thank you.
God bless you.
God
Thanks.
Bless you.
We'll be right back on Hibernian Radio after these messages from our friends.
They say Irish women can be a strange blend of shyness, of pride and conceit, yet they have a stubborn refusal to bow in defeat. Their hate is as fierce as their devotion is grand, yet there is no middle ground on which they will stand. My family and friends tell me this sums me up exactly. I'm Carol Ann Gallagher. I am a proud Irish immigrant and now a partner at Dwyer & Coogan, a personal injury law firm here in Chicago. I was born and raised on a little island off the coast of Donegal. I studied and practiced law in Ireland before emigrating to Chicago 11 years ago, and I took up the practice of law here too. As a personal injury lawyer, I've been blessed to help those who find themselves in vulnerable and tragic circumstances. In my proud representation of families injured by the negligence of others, I've secured millions of dollars in verdicts and settlements for my clients. I can be your advocate. I can have your back. I will fight for you when you feel like you have no fight left within yourself. For more information, please go to my website at dwyercoogan.com or give me a call, Caroline Gallagher, at 312-543-4642. That's 312-543-4642. All of our consultations are free. Thanks for listening.
There's no friend like an old friend. Southside cousins Mike and Dick Haggerty have been selling cars for over 45 years. They've been in business together since 1982 when they started their first store where everybody in the old neighborhood bought their cars. I go way back with the Haggertys. Mike's a Mount Carmel alum and Dick is St. Ignatius. Dick and Mike have been particularly classy to me over the years. Whenever I visit their showroom, it's old school. Buick GMC at 9301 South Cicero or the Volkswagen store at 89th and Cicero, both in Oak Lawn. So do yourself a favor. Get to know the Haggerty family. You'll be delighted you did. I'm currently driving a used car I bought at Haggerty's. It's a gem. And when I think I got lucky, I have to tell myself, no, it's because Haggerty took good care of me. God bless him. Call him today at 708-423-5000, 708-423-5000, or go to HaggertyCars.com. Generations of Southside Irish have been happily driving Haggerty cars for generations. Visit Mike Haggerty Buick and GMC at 93rd and Cicero, and Mike Haggerty Volkswagen at 89th and Cicero. And tell them Hooley sent you. And if you're a first responder, you just might get a better deal than I did.
McCann's Irish Oatmeal. We've been warming the hearts, minds, and souls of the most discriminating oatmeal lovers for over 150 years. From the family farm to your table, enjoy the whole grain goodness of McCann's Irish Oatmeal today, available at your local grocery store.
With a history going all the way back to 1896, the International Union of Operating Engineers has continued to protect workers and their families with loyalty and brotherhood. Local 150 has continued to thrive through economic booms and busts with careful training and aggressive organizing. Under the leadership of President and Business Manager Jim Sweeney, Local 150 has implemented programs and action plans to create work, protect benefits, and keep members working. And they've been helping the Irish American community of Chicagoland for just as long. The Hibernian Radio Show is proud to be associated with Jim Sweeney and Local 150, and we salute the continuing efforts of the International Union of Operating Engineers and their support of Irish and Irish American families now and in the future. Thanks to Local 150.
This is Mike Houlihan. I support Concern Worldwide. If you want to do something about global poverty, hunger, refugees, the unacceptable suffering of young children, if you want to reach people directly where the need is greatest, you should too. For 50 years, since its grassroots beginnings in Dublin, Concern has saved and changed millions of lives. It's been the proud, relentlessly compassionate face of Ireland to the world. Support Concern today at concernusa.org. That's concernusa.org. There is no more Irish thing you can do.
And we're back. Hibernian Radio. Hey, big thanks to Danny O'Shea. He was terrific. Also, I want to, and I mentioned this briefly before. Here's a note from our old pal Jeff Lang. Hey, Hooley, Bailey the Beagle's birthday is October 10th. Just saying. She'll be 3 years old. She will be celebrating with her sister, Katie DeSpaniel. Okay, that from Jeff Lang. And as I said before, I've had a long career in show business, and now I'm doing shout-outs to Cap's dogs on the radio. Okay. Thanks, Jeff Lang, for that. Okay, Pete Nolan's here. My old pal from Nolan and Houlihan Limited. Pete, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
You've never been on this show. You've been on the Skinny and Hooli show plenty of times.
Yeah, now it's just you.
Yeah, it's just me. Me and people like you.
Skinny retired. He's got the full retirement.
I'm glad you mentioned that. We want to wish Skinny good luck. He's running Sunday in the marathon.
I saw that.
And he said it was his 49th marathon. Every time you turn around, it gets bigger, the number.
I thought he had quit a long time ago.
He should have.
Yeah, well,
hopefully he'll be okay. But good job, Skinny. And don't get carried away. If you feel you're out of breath, stop. Take a drink. That's what Pete's doing. So, Pete, first of all, you had that great book, Campaign, about the election of Harold Washington, which was monumental. Terrific book. And you have, and this one, when did this come out?
A year ago, actually. Okay. No, it's going to be, 2 years. It came out in 18. In like March, I think, February or March. So it's coming up on 2 years.
It's a terrific book. Great bathroom book.
You know, because
the stories are only a page, page and a half, some of them. And it's just all the fascinating people. Now, your career, you got here in Chicago for the 68 convention, I believe, right?
I did, yes.
And so all that time, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, you were there on the street. You saw it all, you know, politics in particular. Well, I'd also point out that Pete and I worked together on the 51st Ward, his groundbreaking play on Chicago politics, a musical.
Yes. Well, you know, Mike, I tell you, I was very lucky because I had a job that was very interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I tell people that I would get up in the morning and... I lived in Glencoe. I raised my family
six
there. Nice suburb, six kids. I get up, I'd go walk over to the Chicago and Northwestern train stations, now Metra, and I get a paper, a couple papers, get a cup of coffee, come downtown, read the papers, walk over to the merchandise mart, and go up to the 19th floor where NBC was. Walk in, maybe hobnob a little bit with my fellow workers. And then I'd hear some gruff voice, Nolan. And there was a woman, too. It was a male and a female. The woman was just as tough as the man.
Assignment desk person?
Yes, on the assignment. Get over here. And they'd give me a sheaf of wire copy and papers and so forth. And I'd go downstairs and meet a camera crew. And I go out on some new adventure every day.
Yeah, every day an adventure.
It was different. Over the years, I think I visited just about every Chicago neighborhood.
Yeah.
And probably most of the suburbs and some downstate communities.
And you were in Springfield a lot.
Springfield and a lot. And then I also had spent a lot of time at City Hall.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a fun thing. I mean...
And this was Richard J. Daley.
Richard J. Daley, and he was a great character. Just to bring the current thing, current politics, I want to write a note to Joe Biden.
Yeah.
And tell him, instead of yelling at Trump and blaming it all, just say what Mayor Daley, his son's got some business. It was quite a controversy.
Oh, I remember that.
They were hired by, an insurance company. And they...
11th Ward.
They were given... they got the insurance deal to cover the Civic Center Plaza, now the Daley Center.
Yeah.
Well, that was a hot story. And most of the time, Daley, we'd ask him, well, how did your sons get that? And he'd say, I'll talk about that at the proper time. And so
didn't he also
one time he said, if you can't put your arms around your kids, well, they can kiss my mistletoe. And I wanted to send a note to Joe Biden. Forget about it. Just say,
yeah,
because you know what? The people bought that.
Except his kid got like $90 million.
He got a lot of dough.
Yeah.
I think that's a story that it's easier to understand than the other stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, you met all these characters throughout your career. And in your book, there's like a little story about each one of them, like Jimmy Hoffa. Tell us your Hoffa story.
Jimmy Hoffa. Who was he, anyway?
Teamsters.
Jimmy Hoffa, was missing... Missing in action, it was a huge story, and he. There was rumors that he was underneath.
Were building a giant stadium.
And so forth. You caught me at a senior moment. I'm trying to remember the story. Okay, so he gets. Before he could disappear, before his death or his demise, he was sent to prison because he had supported Richard Nixon. And they got him and they sent him to prison for something. I think I don't know if it was Bobby Kennedy was
involved. Oh, yeah, Bobby Kennedy was all over him.
Okay, yeah. So he goes to, I remember he went to Lewisburg prison in Pennsylvania, and he gets pardoned or commuted, I can't remember which, but he was let out of jail by Richard Nixon at Christmas time. They sent us down to St. Louis. And there's a...
So you're going to cover his release?
We're going to... He was sent to his... he went to his daughter's house.
Yeah.
And she lived in a real nice suburb of St. Louis. The name escapes me now, but it's in the book, I believe. And there's in this nice little neighborhood, there's a mob of reporters and camera crews and trucks. And you know, you don't want that in your neighborhood. You don't need that. We're all standing around out there, and finally, Jimmy comes out, and he gives us a few words. He did the smart thing, because then everybody's going to go away.
Yeah.
Get rid of. So he's talking, and all of a sudden, I got my mic in there, and I see him, his eyes, and he starts to smile, and all of a sudden, I hear a commotion, and behind, two cameramen are in a fight. And they're duking it out, and he was loving it, and so forth. And we finished there. They broke it up, and he went in, and we went home. But years later, I met his son. Now, our friend Jimmy Strong tells me Jimmy Strong was tight with him.
Yeah,
said I think he's still maybe the head of the Teamsters Union.
He's still, yeah.
James Hoffa Jr. Well, I met him in a restaurant. And I told him that story. He said he just broke up.
Oh, sure.
He said, yeah, my old man. He loved a good fight. But they never found him. They never found him.
Yeah. What about, and this is a funny story, as I recall, Bull Jive. Was it Bull Jive Taylor? Is that who the guy was?
Jimmy Taylor. He was a great guy, really. I liked
Chicago
him.
Chicago politician.
He was a Chicago pal. He came up from Arkansas. And he hooked up with the Democratic Party and had a good job. As everybody hooked up with the Democratic Party, he had a job in the sanitation department, and he was active, you know, in politics, a precinct captain, I'm sure. And then he gets picked to go down to Springfield as a state rep.
Yeah.
And he went. He was sent to sit up in the back, the House chamber, with all the, I call them rednecks. They're all Southern Illinois.
Oh, yeah. Loved him. Because he was a black guy. And
he was a big black guy who was a former prize fighter.
Yeah.
So he regaled them with stories of the prize fight. And they came up, somebody in the Black Caucus came up and said,
What are you doing with those rednecks?
Do you want to change your seat? He said, no, I'll stay here.
Yeah.
And he got friendly with these. Pretty soon, Jimmy Taylor is voting for mosquito abatement stuff in Southern Illinois, and he's got these guys voting for welfare bills in Cook County. And but anyway, by the time Jane Byrne got in, he was with Jane Byrne, and she gave him some huge job.
Yeah,
in City Hall. I forget what it was. It's in the book.
But he also made some crack to some woman.
He was the committeeman now, and I can stand corrected. I think it was the 8th Ward, but it's in the book. A couple of nice young African-American women wanted to start a beauty parlor in the ward, and you had to see the alderman to get zoning. They went and saw him. And they were shocked when he allegedly made some advances toward them.
Sexual overtures.
Who do they go to but the great columnist Mike Royko?
Yeah.
And Royko sits him down, and they tell this story. And, of course, Royko, being the old veteran newsman, figures, well, this is another he said type of thing. Except he calls Jimmy Taylor. And he says, did you ask for some favors from these women? And he says, oh, yeah, Mike. He says, I did. He says, but I was just bull jiving him. I was bull jiving him. And that's how it is. He got the nickname. Jimmy Bull Jive. But he was really a nice guy. I liked him.
Now, here's the great story that I remember when I first got to Chicago that kind of put you in a class by yourself. One of the Kennedys, the daughter was mentally disabled or whatever.
Rosemary Kennedy.
Rosemary Kennedy. And she was missing. And you found her.
Yeah.
It was a big deal.
Well, I was kind of embarrassed by it because they made me out to look like some sort of hero. And I was working that day. Beautiful fall day in October. And I remember we were at, the governor was speaking at the Hilton or the Pitt Congress, and we were getting over there to set up. And I got a phone call or a beep. We had beepers in those days. And I called the office on a payphone.
That was a long time ago.
And they said, you got to get out of there right now. Rosemary Kennedy, the sister of the late president, is missing. So he said, just get out in the car and get over to St. Peter's. Now, she had been with her sister, Eunice Shriver, at St. Peter's Church there in Madison. Is it St. Peter's?
Yeah.
And so she was institutionalized. She lived with nuns in Wisconsin, and Eunice Shriver occasionally would visit her. They'd stay in a hotel. And they'd go to, well, Eunice, you know, had lived in Chicago. Sarge Shriver was on the school board, or head of the school board at one time.
He also ran McCormick, or not Merchandise Mart, didn't he?
I think he probably did. Yeah, I think he did. As one of the other younger Kennedys.
Yeah, Chris Kennedy still runs.
Yeah. So anyway, they left me. As she was talking to somebody, and the lady, Rosemary, walked off. So
vanished.
To make a long story short, they told us, just stay in the loop, stay in the loop. And I told the crew, I said, wait till Mayor Daley gets word about this. You're going to see cops all over the place. Pretty soon, there's cops all over the place. And then we're on Michigan Avenue, across from the Art Institute. We had a description. We see her, and I said, we parked the car, and I told the crew, just stay back. This, I don't know what's going to happen. Just stay back a little bit. And I went over and tried to talk to her. She couldn't talk at all. I asked her, I said, are you looking for Eunice? And she seemed to indicate. So I yelled back to the crew, call the cops. I mean, I'm not going to try to interview this woman. She couldn't even speak.
Yeah.
So am I making noise with that? Okay. I'm hitting this cord here all the time, but using my hands. Well, anyway, they made a big deal of it as me as a hero, which kind of embarrassed me because I said, anybody in their right mind.
Oh, what's a big deal?
Well, they made it into it. I didn't want to. In the book, I kind of put it into third person. I didn't want to make myself a big deal in it. But it was quite an interesting
story. Mayor Daley had you up in front of the entire city council.
He brought me to the city council. Yeah. But do you remember the what do you call it, the side story or the your friend? We were having lunch years later. The lady who is a whole bunch of your pals from the South Side, that gang, and the woman said she was, nobody knew where Rosemary had walked off to. She was in Orchestra Hall.
It was Mary Corrigan.
Mary Corrigan told us, she said, I remember she came in there and she was well-dressed.
Mary Corrigan was an Andy Frayn usher.
Yeah, and so she said she sat her down, and she must have walked out just by chance. We're coming by.
Yeah.
So that was the Rosemary Kennedy.
That was a great story, though. You know, one of the things I always admired about you, when we first started working together, you were still on the job on TV and everything, and that's when the news media was starting to go nuts. if someone's home burned down and the guy's wife was killed, they wanted you to go interview the husband or how do you feel? You know, and I know you would say, I'm not doing that. God bless you. You just said, no, this is baloney. It's BS.
Well,
exploiting people in their, you know, weakest moments.
Yeah, people would always ask me about that stuff. And I said, you know, a lot of times people in this moment of tragedy want to say something. They want to talk. But most of the time they don't. And we had a call one time from the desk. And the desk person said, go to such and such address in Evanston. It was a family. The daughter was murdered on an L stop in Evanston.
Yeah.
And I said, has anybody contacted the family? And they said, no. I said, well, you've got, I'm not going to go knock on their door
and tell them.
And say, you know, what do you have to say? They couldn't get an answer at the house, so I said, I'm not going to go there, Cole.
Good for you.
You know, and I think that's the way you need to approach those things. If they want to talk, and you see it on television all the time, people want to, and they break down, they want to say something.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you got a mic there, let them talk.
Yeah.
It's a catharsis, I think.
One more story. And you can get the book at Amazon. It's called News Stories by Peter Nolan. It's terrific. You will love it. Christmas is coming. It's a great gift.
Barnes & Noble, you can order.
You can get it everywhere.
And what is it? Nook and all those other
things. Yeah, you can get the Kindle version.
Yeah, whatever, yeah.
So Otto Kerner was in jail, and you were covering him. He was the governor, and he was released. Finally, he had and you met him. And took the plane back with him.
I did, yeah.
After prison.
I covered his trial, you know.
Oh, okay.
And I remember I had written to him in prison to see if I could get an interview.
Yeah.
And I have a letter at home where he said, it's not a good for me to be doing an interview with my keepers. They may not like it.
Yeah.
So anyway... we got sent down to Lexington, Kentucky.
To the federal prison.
I drove by that place here coming back from Florida this past spring. Anyway, I'm trying to think.
You guys were on the same flight together, right?
Well, we were. I'm trying to think of whether we were there when he got
out of jail.
Out of jail. I'm getting confused. I'm thinking of Tom Keene.
Oh, yeah. That's in the book, too.
I covered a lot of guys getting out of jail. Well, at any rate, Kerner, what I recall was we were at the Lexington, Kentucky airport.
Yeah.
And he's sitting there all alone.
Yes.
And I got a ticket and I got a camera crew. In those days, the camera crew was sitting and had first class tickets by their union contract.
Wow.
And we had the editorial people. It was, I think it was in the 70s when there was a kind of a recession, and they said they had us, we didn't have it in our contract.
No.
So we flew coach.
Yeah.
So
Stars had to fly coach.
I get in, sit next to him, and I asked him if I could sit down with him. He said, yeah. So we had a great visit, and he's talking about politics. I remember asking him. It had to be tough to. Yeah. The guy had been a U.S. appellate court judge.
Yeah, he was a big deal.
He was a general in World War II. Well, not in World War II, but he was in the Illinois Guard, a general, and I said to him, it had to be tough in prison. For you, he says, Peter, I was at the Kasserine Pass in Africa when the Americans had their first big loss in World War II, brutal. And he says, that was tough.
That was tough.
This was nothing.
Yeah.
Anyway, in those days, I remember you could smoke on airplanes.
Yeah.
So I didn't dare because he had been diagnosed with
cancer.
Lung cancer.
Yeah.
So I didn't smoke. Everybody smoked. It seemed like
on
everybody.
On the plane. Yeah.
And pretty soon he pulls out a pack of True cigarettes and offers me one. I said, Governor, or Judge, I forget what, I said, you got lung cancer. He said, oh, no, they caught it early. I'm going to beat it. Well, he was dead within a year.
No, okay.
But and then after...
So you guys shared a smoke together.
We're having a cigarette, and then the chief comes around and wants to know if we want a drink.
Yeah.
Much like you do here. You know? I like that.
That's right.
Anyway, so I said, let me buy you a drink. And he said, no, Peter, he says, I have not had any money. Wasn't allowed to have any of my own money. So I'm buying you a drink. And the other thing was, I said, Governor, I got to ask you this. I've got a camera crew up in first class. Could we record an interview? He says, Pete, everything I told you tonight you can use, but I just don't want to do an on-camera interview.
Yeah, yeah.
I said, okay. Well, I got off the plane in Chicago. It was Eastern Airlines. Probably they're gone.
Yeah,
that out of Lexington, Kentucky, with a stop in Indianapolis and then to Chicago, and I walk off the plane with Otto Koerner down the ramp, jetway, and into this mob of reporters.
Oh,
we shake hands, and he goes off. And they're all yelling at him, and he was very stoic.
Oh, yeah.
And he goes off into the sunset. And
that's in the book. That's a great story.
It is a good story.
And the book is filled with just terrific stories.
Well, Otto Koerner is a great character, I think.
Yeah.
He was...
very classy guy.
He really was.
Really captured
and,
him.
He had some guys... that did a scheme that got him in trouble, and I don't think he knew too much. He did get the money.
It was the racetrack thing.
He got racetrack stock, which a whole lot of politicians were
getting. Sure they did.
Yeah.
We got to wrap it up. Get the book, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Get it everywhere. News Stories, a memoir by Peter Nolan. Pete, always great to have you on the show.
Thank you
so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We're going to take a break, and then we'll be right back.
There's no friend like an old friend. Southside Cousins Mike and Dick Haggerty have been selling cars for over 45 years. They've been in business together since 1982, when they started their first store, where everybody in the old neighborhood bought their cars. I go way back with the Haggertys. Mike's a Mount Carmel alum and Dick is St. Ignatius. Dick and Mike have been particularly classy to me over the years. Whenever I visit their showroom, it's old school. Buick GMC at 9301 South Cicero, or the Volkswagen store at 89th and Cicero, both in Oak Lawn. So do yourself a favor. Get to know the Haggerty family. You'll be delighted you did. I'm currently driving a used car I bought at Haggerty's. It's a gem. And when I think I got lucky, I have to tell myself, no, it's because Haggerty took good care of me. God bless him. Call him today at 708-423-5000. 708-423-5000, or go to HaggertyCars.com. Generations of Southside Irish have been happily driving Haggerty cars for generations. Visit Mike Haggerty Buick and GMC at 93rd and Cicero, and Mike Haggerty Volkswagen at 89th and Cicero. And tell them Hooley sent you. And if you're a first responder, you just might get a better deal than I did. There's only one Irish pub on the Chicago River, and that's Lizzie McNeil's at 400 North McClure Court. We spent a lot of time there, taping the Hibernian radio show at Lizzie McNeil's every Wednesday night. You can escape the hustle and bustle of Navy Pier and relax at Lizzie McNeil's. Our old pal John Wren is your host. Please say hello when you stop by for one of their ice-cold brews in an authentic Irish pub. One visit and you'll be calling it your hometown hangout. We've been hanging at Lizzie's for going on 10 years now, so join us. When the weather gets nice, they have two outdoor patio areas where you can take advantage of the sunshine and a cafe menu of salads, sandwiches, and appetizers. Lizzie's also has a great private party room that's perfect for birthdays, graduations, and most nights at Lizzie's you can meet the elite of Chicago's Irish-American community. So stop by Lizzie McNeil soon, right by the river, and tell them you were sent by your old pal, Hooley. Thanks.
McCann's Irish Oatmeal. We've been warming the hearts, minds, and souls of the most discriminating oatmeal lovers for over 150 years. From the family farm to your table, enjoy the whole grain goodness of McCann's Irish Oatmeal today. Available at your local grocery store.
When your family has suffered a loss, there's one family I know who will be there for you. Robert J. Sheehy & Sons Funeral Homes are third generation, family owned and operated. The Sheehy family has dedicated their lives serving families throughout Chicago and the southwest suburbs. The Robert J. Sheehy & Sons Funeral Home was incorporated in 1913 as a storefront at 76th and Halsted in Chicago. At the time, this was one of the few standalone funeral homes of its kind and was to be the first of many to come bearing the Sheehy name. The founder, Roger Sheehy Sr., was soon joined in business by his three sons, Roger Jr., Jack, and Bob. This trademark of service is evident 98 years later, as Bob and Jim Sheehy, third generation, own and operate two locations in Orland Park and Burbank. At Sheehy's, the name on their sign outside the funeral home means something. For them, it's very important that everyone be treated as if they were family, friend, or neighbor, as they very well could be. When my brother Willie died a few years ago, the Sheehys took very good care of our family. And you know, you never forget something like that. Their entire staff cares about each and every family they serve. Every detail is handled in a professional and personal manner. On a daily basis, the directors Bill Kiley, Mike LaRocque, and John Sullivan, and the rest of the staff take great pride in their work, serving families as if they were their own. Bob Sheehy will tell you, we pride ourselves on offering the highest level of professionalism with every family we serve. Robert J. Sheehy & Sons Funeral Homes, here for you since 1913.
They say Irish women can be a strange blend of shyness, of pride and conceit, yet they have a stubborn refusal to bow in defeat. Their hate is as fierce as their devotion is grand, yet there is no middle ground on which they will stand. My family and friends tell me this sums me up exactly. I'm Carol Ann Gallagher. I am a proud Irish immigrant and now a partner at Dwyer & Coogan, a personal injury law firm here in Chicago. I was born and raised on a little island off the coast of Donegal. I studied and practiced law in Ireland before emigrating to Chicago 11 years ago, and I took up the practice of law here too. As a personal injury lawyer, I've been blessed to help those who find themselves in vulnerable and tragic circumstances. In my proud representation of families injured by the negligence of others, I've secured millions of dollars in verdicts and settlements for my clients. I can be your advocate. I can have your back. I will fight for you when you feel like you have no fight left within yourself. For more information, please go to my website at dwyercoogan.com or give me a call, Caroline Gallagher, at 312-543-4642. That's 312-543-4642. All of our consultations are free. Thanks for listening.
And we're back. Hey, the great Pete Nolan. Thanks to Pete for doing the show. Get that book, News Stories, a memoir by Peter Nolan. Great gift and just a great book to read. Hey, if you're going over to Western Avenue tonight, drop by and see our friends Mary and Bernard Callahan over at Barney Callahan's Irish Pub, 10618 Southwestern. It's the perfect Southside Irish bar. There's always something going on there. And tell them Hooley sent you. Or you can drop in and see our friends Mike Courtney and his wife Donna at the Twisted Shamrock Irish Pub, 6462 South Central Avenue, one of the best Irish pubs in the Midway area, and Mike and Don will take good care of yous. And the Irish American News has been bringing you the news important to the Irish in Chicagoland for over 40 years. If you like mostly good news and information from all facets of the Irish community, check out the Irish American News. All right, now I'm going to be in Ireland next week, so we're going to do a repeat of the Alamo Lynch show. Thanks you all for listening. And then we got Tom McKenna coming next week. Thanks. I'm so glad you guys are listening. Thanks so much for joining us. And we'll catch you next week on Hibernian Radio.
Well, I look down the road and I wonder Earth.